Donald J. Trump sacrificed our national security in an effort to cheat in the next election.
It's done. The U.S. House approves impeachment of President Trump. It's Friday, December 20th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Doug Bernard in Washington. Also ahead, tensions back on the rise between India and Pakistan. Protests ramp up against India's new citizenship law and the renewed fight against pancreatic cancer. All that and more, all on today's VOA Asia. Thursday marked the 1,033rd day of the Trump presidency, but it was his first being impeached. On a party-line vote, the U.S. House of Representatives voted to impeach President Trump late Wednesday. Lawmakers passed charges that he abused the power of the presidency to benefit himself and obstructed Congress' efforts to investigate him. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson has more from Capitol Hill.
Donald Trump, now the third president in 230 years of U.S. history to be impeached by the U.S. House of Representatives. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi warning Democrats not to cheer the historic moment after acknowledging the seriousness of the vote earlier.
It is tragic that the president's reckless actions make impeachment necessary. He gave us no choice.
The vote ends the House's divisive three-month investigation into the president. It began with a whistleblower complaint alleging Trump held up nearly $400 million in congressionally approved military aid to Ukraine in return for a personal political favor from Ukraine's leader to investigate political rival Joe Biden and his son Hunter, a move Democrats said endangered American democracy. House Intelligence Committee Chairman Adam Schiff.
In America, no one is above the law. Donald J. Trump sacrificed our national security in an effort to cheat in the next election. And for that, and his continued efforts to seek foreign interference in our elections, he must be impeached.
Speaking as lawmakers impeached him, Trump said the vote would ruin Democrats' political fortunes instead of his.
With today's illegal, unconstitutional, and partisan impeachment, the do-nothing Democrats, and they are do-nothing, all they want to do is focus on this, what they could be doing, are declaring their deep hatred and disdain for the American voter.
Polls show lawmakers aren't the only ones divided. Around 43% of the American public supports Trump, while around half of the American public supports impeachment. University of Virginia professor Larry Sabato.
That is a significant change from the last impeachment that we had. What it doesn't mean is that Trump's presidency will end early. We are so partisan now in the United States, and our polarization by party is so intense that really impeachment is not even a power anymore. It doesn't work.
But the historic vote does place Trump in a small group of U.S. presidents forever remembered for facing the ultimate disapproval of lawmakers. While Democrats' passage of articles of impeachment requires a trial of Trump in the Republican-majority Senate early next year, he will almost certainly be acquitted and stay in office.
Republicans were never going to expel Trump, but it's a warning to President Trump. Whether he serves one more year as president or five more years as president, it's going to remind him of what can happen when you go too far.
Despite the expectation Trump will remain in office, impeachment is a rare moment in U.S. political history and now a permanent mark on the record of President Trump. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Capitol Hill.
These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on voanews.com. Hong Kong police say they have frozen $10 million from a major fund to help pro-democracy protesters. Pakistan's ailing former president said the death sentence given to him by a court was based on a personal vendetta. Three small explosions went off in a southern Rakhine town in Myanmar just before civilian leader Aung San Suu Kyi landed there in a rare visit. And Secretary of State Mike Pompeo met with his Indian counterpart for strategic and security talks. We can watch more on VOA Asia Facebook and Twitter, and visit our website, voanews.com. VOA Asia continues. Pakistan says that rival India has deployed, among other things, medium-range missiles in the disputed Kashmir, allegedly to stage a cross-border military attack and harm regional peace. VOA Steve Miller spoke with reporter Ayaz Ghul in Islamabad to learn more.
Ayaz, can you let us know what has been alleged and what do we really know about the allegations about these missiles being deployed?
Well, today in Pakistan, an unusual statement was issued by the foreign ministry, Foreign Minister Shah Mahmood Qureshi. It was a video statement, and what he said was that the Pakistani intelligence agencies have reported that there has been a massive military movement along the line of control in Kashmir, which divides the Himalayan region between India and Pakistan, and that even Indian military has deployed medium-range missiles. So what the foreign minister of Pakistan said, that he has written a letter to the United Nations Security Council informing the council about this dangerous escalation that he says could be an attempt to launch an attack against Pakistan.
Of course, all of this is taking place under a communications blackout for those that are in Kashmir pretty much since all this began a few months ago.
And Pakistan has been consistently demanding and urging the world community to pay attention to this issue and force India to lift this blockade. And that is why this Pakistan trying to internationalize this dispute with India over Kashmir has obviously annoyed India, which has consistently maintained that both the countries have to resolve this issue bilaterally rather than going to any international forum. So India is not happy and Pakistan is not happy, and both countries have already fought three wars, two of them over Kashmir, and we once again see quite a dangerous escalation with latest claims by Pakistan that even medium-range missiles India has deployed in Kashmir for some kind of, preparation for a conflict with Pakistan.
Ayaz Ghul is in Islamabad. Thank you very much for joining us and providing this update.
Thank you, Steve.
Reporter Ayaz Ghul speaking with VOA's Steve Miller. Happening now in Asia, Saudi Arabia is one of a handful of Muslim nations not in attendance at a four-day conference in Kuala Lumpur aimed at addressing some of the Islamic world's thorniest issues. The conference was organized by Malaysia's prime minister and is expected to deal with such issues as the plight of the Muslim Uyghurs. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy you're with us on VOA Asia. There was lots of posturing, but little progress in 2019, as the United States and North Korea spent much of the year trying to convince the other side to take the first steps in nuclear talks. VOA's Bill Gallo has that story.
2019 began with Kim Jong-un warning he may take a new way if the U.S. didn't soften its stance in nuclear talks. The world may soon find out just what he means by that. Talks broke down after Donald Trump walked away from a February summit with Kim in Hanoi.
They were willing to denuke a large portion of the areas that we wanted, but we couldn't give up all of the sanctions for that. We had to walk away from that.
Within weeks, North Korean rockets began flying and kept flying. By some measures, 2019 was North Korea's busiest year ever for missile launches. Though Trump shrugged off the short-range tests, the talks never got back on track, even after a third Trump-Kim meeting at the demilitarized zone. In October, North Korea was the one to walk away from working-level talks. The North's top nuclear negotiator blamed the U.S. old viewpoint and attitude for the breakdown. Now, North Korea is giving signs it may conduct a long-range missile test and is warning on an almost daily basis about Kim's end-of-year deadline, which U.S. officials have ignored. Trump and Kim may soon return to exchanging threats of war instead of handshakes, says analyst Bong Young-sik.
If North Korea engages in provocations to the United States, it will only make Trump to rely on fire and fury, even for the purpose of his re-election.
Bong is one of many analysts who's concerned things may get more tense, in part because North Korea believes it can influence Trump's re-election chances.
The North Koreans are thinking that the world revolves around North Korea. That is very unfortunate and gross miscalculation and misunderstanding by North Korea.
At least some of that perception may be driven by Trump, who's recently linked the two issues. That, despite polls suggesting foreign policy doesn't typically decide U.S. elections, points out analyst John DeLury.
I would say North Korea is extremely low on the list of key issues that are determining the election and that will determine. It would take almost a war, really, for North Korea to have an impact on who the next American president is.
DeLury says there's a danger for miscalculation in 2020 if North Korea really thinks it can influence the U.S. vote.
Those political considerations won't be that significant, and say a provocation that they stage will have a conventional security or even military response, and they'll be surprised because they thought they were able to play U.S. domestic politics when in fact they're not. Everyone knows that the election's not about North Korea.
Nonetheless, North Korea appears to be hardening its stance, recently suggesting denuclearization is off the negotiating table. It's also threatened an ominous Christmas gift to the U.S. Because of comments like that, many fear that Fire and Fury Round 2 could be around the corner. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul.
And you're listening to VOA Asia.
Jazz America!
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
This news alert from VOA Asia: Australia's state of New South Wales declared a 7-day state of emergency as oppressive heat fanned around 100 wildfires. Around 2,000 firefighters were battling the blazes, half of which remain uncontrolled. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for top stories. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. When India's contentious new citizenship law passed easily through Parliament, few in Mr. Modi's government anticipated a violent backlash. But in the weeks since its passage, protests have raged through the country. Vehicles have been torched. Thousands of students from some of the country's most prestigious universities have marched in the streets. Anjana Pasricha reports.
Vehicles torched, angry demonstrations, slogans denouncing a new citizenship law that excludes Muslims from six religious groups that stand to get citizenship if they are from three neighboring countries and flee persecution. College students have been at the forefront of the protests staged across the country.
Our refugee policy cannot be on religious grounds. Our constitution does not allow it. It can be on humanitarian grounds.
This is the agenda of creating a barricade between Hindu and Muslim and basically distracting us from the real issues, that is economic crisis.
Prime Minister Narendra Modi says the new law is a humanitarian measure to help those who have no place to go except India. His critics have questioned why it does not include groups like the Rohingyas, the Muslim minority in Myanmar who also face persecution. An estimated 40,000 live in India.
This law, which changes, you know, effectively creates a hierarchy of citizenship based on religious identity, putting Muslims on one side and people of every other major religious identity on the other, in terms of their access to citizenship rights. is a terrifying idea.
Home Minister Amit Shah has told Parliament that no Indian Muslim risks losing his citizenship. But there is deep anxiety among India's largest minority because he has also vowed to roll out a nationwide citizen identification plan to root out illegal immigrants. In the northeastern state of Assam, where such an exercise has been conducted, 2 million face the prospect of being declared stateless. Under the plan, only Muslims risk losing their nationality, while others, such as Hindus, will be protected by the new law.
It undoes what was intended by the Indian Constitution in terms of its secular fabric, but it doesn't redo it in terms of anything else. This largely is a destructive set of laws, not a constructive set of laws.
With demands to scrap the law snowballing, Modi's test will be to ensure that it does not erode his popularity at home or dent the country's image overseas.
You are seeing today, I think, the beginnings of a very, very serious social protest. And I do think this government will be branded as one that is seen as Hindu nationalist, anti-Muslim. Now, does it change its domestic politics in the short term? Probably not. But don't forget that having international acceptance for a developing country like India matters a lot for its larger international goals.
Legal challenges to the new law have already been mounted, but the bigger challenge will be to tackle the groundswell of anger against it. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, New Delhi.
Now on VOA Asia, pancreatic cancer is one of the deadliest types of cancer because it's almost always found too late. This cancer is hard to detect, and symptoms often only show up when the cancer is advanced. But as VOA's Carol Pearson reports, researchers are beginning to make inroads in this most difficult to diagnose disease.
U.S. Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg has survived pancreatic cancer, not once, but twice. Hers was found early, which is rare. The pancreas is an important organ that produces insulin, a hormone that regulates the body's blood sugar. But the pancreas is hard to see. It's at the back of the abdomen, covered by the stomach and the liver. That's why doctors can't detect early tumors during routine physical exams. Dr. Somashekhar Krishna is an endocrinologist who says that's why only 9% of patients diagnosed with pancreatic cancer are alive 5 years after diagnosis.
The cancer doesn't produce any symptoms early on.
Patricia Beatty likes playing cards with her children. She went to the hospital with what she thought was a stomach virus. During a scan of her stomach, the doctor found a cyst.
He told me that that the cyst was there and that it was precancerous.
Pancreatic cancer develops in one of two ways. It either starts as a cancerous tumor or it starts when a cyst changes and becomes cancerous. The difference between a tumor and the cyst is that the tumor is firm, while a pancreatic cyst is filled with fluid. Cysts on the pancreas are common. Most are, fortunately, benign. Doctors can test fluid from inside the cyst, but it's hard to tell which cysts will develop into cancer. Cancerous tumors or cysts can be detected with sonograms or other diagnostic imaging tools, but imaging is so expensive it can't be used as a regular screening device. Dr. Krishna at the Ohio State University Wexner Medical Center led a study of a new diagnostic method that gives doctors a microscopic view of the cyst wall. He says his study showed this virtual biopsy is highly accurate.
We can diagnose cysts with an accuracy of 96% to 97%.
The procedure uses a tiny scope that emits a laser light to produce a cellular image of the inside of the cyst.
Looking at the wall, the pattern, the image pattern which comes from the cyst wall, which comes as a direct video feed in real time, we can conclude what the diagnosis is.
Krishna and others are training doctors at hospitals across the U.S. to use this new technology so they can more accurately diagnose precancerous cysts. This can save lives, but the procedure will only be used after an MRI or a sonogram is ordered for another reason, so the cancer will still grow silently in most people until it's too late to save them. Krishna told VOA that a blood test is the most logical way to find pancreatic cancer early. The problem is it hasn't been developed yet, although researchers are working on it. As for Patricia Beatty, she's cancer-free because this new diagnostic tool found her cyst before it became malignant and spread. Carol Pearson, VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
University of Copenhagen researchers have extracted a complete human genome from 5,700-year-old chewing gum. They say it's the first time an entire ancient human genome has been extracted from anything other than human bones. The chewing gum, which is actually pitch or tar extracted from a birch tree, was found during archaeological excavations in southern Denmark. The scientists say they were also able to extract DNA from oral microorganisms and key human pathogens. After analyzing the genome, the scientists found that the ancient gum chewer was a female and was more closely related genetically to people from mainland Europe than those who lived in Scandinavia at the time. The genome also revealed that she probably had dark skin, dark hair, and blue eyes. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Finally today, in conservative Pakistan, women's sports still lag far behind their male counterparts. But that hasn't stopped women from demanding change. In a poor neighborhood in Pakistan's largest city of Karachi, young women are so passionate about football that they've persisted despite the disapproval of their own families and society. As Aisha Tanzim explains, the young women still have doubts about a future in the sport.
Watching them practice on a sunny afternoon, it is hard to imagine the challenges these young girls had to overcome to be here.
I belong to Liari in Karachi. In our area, girls are not allowed to play football. I had to face an uphill battle. My family told me girls don't play football. I worked hard to convince my family. Now, after watching me become the team captain, they are beginning to slowly change their minds.
These young women belong to a local football club called Jaffa Academy in Karachi's low-income neighborhood, Liari. It is one of many similar private football clubs for girls across the country. While it is registered with the National Football Federation, it receives no funding. The coaches are volunteers. The gear is donated by wealthy individuals. In addition to all the social opposition, many of these girls face tough financial conditions at home. Some are forced to give in to the circumstances despite their passion and talent.
One of our excellent players who used to play midfield and was the vice captain of the team is not with us anymore because her family doesn't support her playing football. Her mother is blind and her brothers discourage her and want her to stay home instead. Another one of her excellent players who used to play forward now has to work for a living after her father died.
Those who manage to swim against the tide and follow their passion complain that they get little official support. While Pakistan has a national women's team, it suffers from lack of resources and general apathy. These young girls say while they've convinced their families to allow them to play, they find it harder to believe they have a future in the sport. Aisha Tanzim, VOA News, Karachi.
And thank you so very much for joining us on VOA Asia today. You can get our program on iTunes and SoundCloud and find us just about everywhere else on YouTube, on Twitter, and on Facebook at VOA Asia. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll see you again real soon.